The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
It's the New Balance Sebastian. Do you like it? New Balance Sebastian.
It's the record we've been listening to and enjoying, Barry.
Well, that's unfortunate because it sucks ass. Yours, I assume? Okay, buddy, I was just trying to cheer us up, so go ahead. Put on some old sad bastard music, see if I care.
I don't want to hear old sad bastard music, Barry. I just want something I can ignore.
Here's the thing. I made that tape special for today. My special Monday morning tape for you.
Special f***ing Monday afternoon. You should get out of bed earlier.
Come on, dude. Play it. Don't you want to hear what's next?
What's next?
Play it.
Say it.
Little Latin loopy loo.
Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels?
No!
The Righteous Brothers.
Well, never mind.
No, not never mind. You tell me right now what's wrong with the Righteous Brothers.
Nothing. I just prefer the other.
Bullshit!
How can it be bullshit to state a preference? Since when did this store become a fascist regime?
Since you brought that bullshit tape in.
Oh, man, that's great. That's the fun thing about working in a record store. You get to play crappy pap you don't even want to listen to. I thought this tape was going to be a fucking conversation stimulator, man.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of September in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us today. It is Monday, September 20th, 2010. Draw near that ye might be entertained. Phones are wait. There we go. Open at 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you want to email, you can do that as well. It is rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached as well at D-A-W-N, dawn@rickemerson.com, and the text box is also up and one presumes functional.
Yes?
Yes, indeed.
All right, so that's up and running at rickemerson.com. Coming up later on the day, we'll do our Mad Men recap, episode 9, season 4, which I believe is called Summer Girls.
The Beautiful Girls.
Beautiful Girls? Summer Girls? Beautiful Girls.
Beautiful Girls.
Beautiful Girls. Not the Katy Perry song, then?
No.
Okay. No, that's California Girls. What is Summer Girls?
Well, you're thinking of The Summer Man, which was the previous episode.
I'm not. I'm thinking of YNT's Summertime Girls.
Oh.
As made famous in 1984 or something. Doesn't matter. Last night, Mad Men, episode 9, season 4, so we'll talk about that. Corpse Watch coming up today. Geek Watch on the way. Taser Watch. And we'll do a top 5. I actually have two different top 5s prepared because that's what Rick Emerson does. He comes here loaded for bear, as they say. So I got two different top 5s. We'll find some way to decide between the two. Later on, we are deducing whether or not Mr. Ryan White is going to be joining us today. He's a new father, and he's got like a, what do you call it, like a job. So he may or may not be here later on in the program. We are going to dig into the bottom of that. So we will do the top five regardless. We got two of those prepared. We'll find one of them to plunge on into. Let's see. We have a musical request we'll get to. Actually, this is a thing we got on Friday, and we really get a chance because we were just all overwhelmed by the Triscuit consumption, which really just, I mean, that'll sap your will to live. Just the amount of sodium. I mean, not that they weren't good. Not that there wasn't a certain sort of grim satisfaction to it, but goddamn.
I thought you would take the rest of the Triscuits home with you, and then I came in here this morning, and there's these three sad, lonely boxes of Triscuits just still sitting here on the chair.
Well, they're not going to be lonely for long, Don, because my time of being horrified at my own Triscuit consumption, that time is at an end, so I'll be ingesting those later on today. I love those.
I did want to ask you a question, and I'm interrupting you. I know. I'm sorry. I'm irritating the hell out of you today. I know, and I can't help it.
I'm sorry.
I am. I keep saying things and doing things, and you're getting that look on your face, like you're knitting your brow, like, girl, you. I can tell. I'm annoying you.
No, you are not annoying me at all.
Really?
Yeah, you are not. It's I'm cutting you slack today because I know you're not feeling well.
Thank you so much.
No, it's just one of those things where I'm already thinking about all of the stuff that we got to do today and how it is we're possibly going to get it all put into place. And this is no one's fault, but this is really no one's fault at all. But I'm the business of not knowing whether Ryan White is going to be here is one of those things that, again, it's not like it's Ryan's fault or, you know, Cheryl's fault or my fault or whatever. If anybody's fault, it's mine because I should have looked into it last night and I didn't. And so then I've got that big, it's like a big sort of like blinking cursor in the flow chart of my mind about what is coming up in the second hour of the show. So I'm working backward from that. And you're ill anyway, so it seems like it would be poor sport for me to be irritated at you regardless.
That's true, but I mean, you know, you do, I can tell that you're a little bit, as Cheryl would say, cranky pants. And, you know, and I can't blame you really because yes, we've got a couple of things that are big giant question marks today. You know, that should have been nailed down, and yet we're not. And so,
it's okay, I'm playing through it. I'm playing through the pain, Dawn. It's all professionalism on this side of the table, Missy. We're plunging on ahead.
I'm telling you that I am. Anything that goes on with you, any way you are, any way you're feeling, anything that's happening over there, I'm okay with. I accept you however you are. I love you for yourself, Rick Emerson. Cranky, not cranky, playing through the pain, enjoying life, however you are. I am on your side.
You know what you should continue to do, though, to make sure that I'm not cranky? You should continue to interrupt me, to tell me that even if I become cranky, it's going to be fine with you. And
sure?
That you're going to accept me any way I am. Feel free just to butt in whenever you like to make that observation.
Okay.
All right. Has everybody said what they need to say? Are we ready to continue? For the love of God? Last chance.
I'm not saying anything now.
Okay. It is 503. Yes, yeah, that's always the way that works out. It's 503-505-6964. I'm not cranky. I'm really not. But this is. Seriously, this is going to be one of those things where you are going to continue to make the observation that if I am cranky, it's okay, and it's going to put me into crankyville.
No, I now accept that you are not cranky.
But the irony is now I'm all now I'm going to be all cranked up about whether or not I am becoming cranky. See, and it's going to be a whole weird navel gazing, self-explanatory, self-examining thing.
See, now I'm going to be dealing with you as a man who is not cranky.
Well, that time has passed as well. I think now we're just
blowing my mind. I don't know what to expect from you.
I think now we're in an amorphous middle ground. All right. Thank you for the text, by the way. Says, man, Rick, you sure are cranky today. Thanks. I appreciate that. All right. It's 503-505-69. Now I don't even know how to proceed. Now I just feel self-conscious. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Do you need to take a moment just for you?
I don't even know. I'm just going to start the show over again. Hold on a second. We're just going to start this from scratch. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
It's the New Balance Sebastian. Do you like it? Sebastian.
It's the record we've been listening to and enjoying, Barry.
Well, that's unfortunate because it sucks ass. Yours, I assume?
know what I've realized? I can't listen to this Katrina and the Waves thing again either, though. Because if I were not already cranky, hearing this song twice in, like, rapid succession, that'll certainly do the job. We'll just, tell you what, we'll just do this. We'll just plunge on it. All right. Does everybody feel better now?
I feel great.
All right. Well, you felt bad early before the show. You were saying that you were sick and that you felt you were under the weather and you didn't feel up to snuff today.
Well, yeah. I was sick all weekend, and as you can probably hear in my voice, I'm still getting over it. But I have in my system as we speak right now, I had a quad cappuccino beverage on my way into the office. I've had Alka-Seltzer cold medicine. And I'm drinking a Vizo that somewhere in the middle of Legion of News, I added a shot of vodka to.
That's awesome.
So I think I'm doctoring myself as well as I possibly can under the circumstances.
All right. Well, in any event, and this is all true. So here we are. So it's 1:30. It is 503-505-6964. No, I left the boxes of Triscuits on Friday because Greg and Sarah had been on the last, I don't know, half hour of our show. They'd come in because they were going to be taping Fun Employment Radio in the afternoon. And then Kelly Clark from Willamette Week was going to be here, and she's like their food, you know, chick. So, and she was the one she'd called in earlier in the week, and she'd weighed in about Triscuit nachos. And so I thought, how could I, as a good person, how could I have three boxes of Triscuits and not share? And I left them, and I don't think they were actually even touched. I don't think they were eaten. I think Greg and Sarah had their fill of the Triscuits during our show, and I think Kelly, she's not a fan of the, like, she doesn't go for anything but the regular traditional Triscuit. Like, she's not down with the rosemary, the cracked pepper, the garden herb, or whatever. I did not know that at the time, and so I left them behind, and then I went home, and I think I mentioned this on Friday, that when I went to the store, like, Thursday night, and I bought the Triscuits, I had this whole thing, I was walking through Safeway, and it was sort of a one for me, one for them kind of a thing, where I had three boxes of Triscuits here for the studio, and then I had three boxes that I took home. So I had a duplicate of each of the boxes, which are all gone, by the way. I mean, I consumed those over the course of the weekend. It was just like one long sort of wheaty bacchanalian at my house. So I think I'm all full, but by the end of today's program, I will once again need to carbo load to make up for all the energy that I've expended here amusing the people.
May I ask you a question about the Triscuits, by the way? One of the things I was noticing when I came in today is that two of those three boxes look like they were ripped open by rabid wolverines. And I have on occasion seen you open things.
Yes.
And it's interesting to me considering that, like myself, you do have certain little OCD behaviors. One of mine is I want things to be opened properly so they can be reclosed appropriately. So it drives me crazy. My husband will like rip the top off of something that has one of those resealable Ziplocs and he just completely ignores that.
Because we have, I think our dog food at home is like that, where it's got the yellow and blue make green, the little strip that you seal again at the top.
Yeah, sometimes we get like plastic bags for like frozen vegetables or something like that. And it'll say right on there, open here, resealable bag. And he'll just go tear and just rip the thing open like he's a caveman. And I'm like, it had a resealable thing, honey.
Yeah, but most of the stuff that they make, the resealable doesn't need to be resealed. Like, it's not going to make any difference.
But I've watched you open things a few times, and you tend to attack things without a lot of regard for, you know, seams and actual, like, lines of glue and things that you could operate to actually open them in a neat fashion.
Is this about the way I open the clown porn?
No, it's about the way you've opened about almost every single thing I've seen you open since I've known you. And I just wonder, is this really just a habit with you? You just kind of go, I have to open this now. Rip, tear, rip. And you just have at it. Like,
I'm just all about the shortest distance between two points.
Okay.
I mean, really. I mean, some folks plan to frame them. I, myself, plan to open them. And then if it's Triscuits, to eat them. So
do you just figure you're going to eat all of the Triscuits, therefore there will be none left over, so therefore there is no need to reseal the box neatly ever?
Well, also, it's a thing I bought for like $1.50 at Safeway, so it's not really like it's going to be hanging in the Louvre. I mean, I guess it's the same reason, like, I don't feel the need to get a letter opener and really carefully open my correspondence. Why? Because the envelope's just the thing that... Because I don't care about the envelope. It's just that that is just the device that carries the letter to me. The letter is important. Whatever's inside that... You know, it's not like I do that with a check. Let me see if I can just destroy this check so it can't be cashed at the bank. But I'll do that with the envelope, because the envelope is just the packaging.
So is this...
Are you, like, all anal about your Christmas presents, too? You gotta be, like, really carefully, like,
no.
Peel off... Well, what's the difference?
Well, because with a Christmas present, when I open up the bag, when I rip the wrapping off, I'm not going to be reusing the wrapping.
I'm not going to be reusing the Triscuit boats. The Triscuits are gone, baby. The box is pointless.
Well, see, that's the thing. Usually when I open a box of snack crackers, I know that I'm not going to eat them all, and I'm going to want to put them back in the closet later, and I want to be able to fold the little thing down and use the tab that closes the box.
You've got problems,
man. The first thing I did when I came in today was I actually closed all those boxes back up. Even though they've been sitting open for 3 days and are probably all stale now, I actually folded the bags down and closed all the boxes back up.
All right, but that is okay, but that has nothing to do with the box itself. That is about the bag, which is a separate issue. Because the bag is presumably what's going to keep them from getting stale. The top of the box has nothing to do with it. The box is a non-issue. That is a non-pertinent factor.
But we have a box right now that came in via UPS, and what I would do is I would take something, a knife if I had it, if I didn't have it, like my keys or something, and I would slit the tape.
On either side, and then you slit open the top.
Yeah, and that way I could open the box and not destroy
Which is how I would do it.
Well, except that I watched you open that clown corn box, and you just went, rah, 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 and did that.
We're talking about a different box. It's all about the fastest way to open. The clown corn box, the little easy opening tab thing, was itself taped over with packing tape. There was no other way to do it. With this, I am just about, here's the thing, it's not like I have some, it's not like boxes killed my family or something. You know, it's like my father was raped by a piece of corrugated cardboard. It's like, I'm just about the fastest way to get anything open. And so with the Triscuit boxes, and I think this is maybe a guy thing, because it's like, I don't care about the aesthetic of the box containing my woven wheats from Safeway. You can just reach under the side, the side flap, and just go, and just tear the top open. To see also breakfast cereal, by the way, because again, with breakfast cereal, it's all about the bag. The bag is the only thing that matters there. With this box here, so we got a crate of goods, which I'm not going to open quite yet. I'm just going to sort of elongate this process as long as possible, sort of ramp up the anticipation. We got this thing from Think Geek. Cheryl Kanakoa obtained that for us. And so I think she mentioned, she gave me sort of a general overview of what she thought Think Geek was going to be sending us, but I've kind of forgotten half of it, and then I think also the other half of it wasn't really, they hadn't really decided. So our good friends at thinkgeek.com have sent us a box of something or other.
And I want some credit for not opening the box, because I was in here with that box for a good hour and a half alone and did not open that box.
Is that really what passes for good behavior now, is not opening mail that doesn't belong to you? Leaving someone else's mail alone?
Well, technically, it's Cheryl's mail, because it's her name on the
box.
Which
is why I haven't opened it. That's what I'm saying.
So do we have to wait until Cheryl gets here?
I'm going to make sure. Well, not until she. I'm going to make sure that she has said it's okay, though.
Oh, okay.
So if she were to say, no, go have at it. You'll know, by the way, that I did not open the box of Bugles. Why? Not addressed to me. Doesn't that mind it? Oh, and also, I didn't know if it was a surprise. Like with the Think Geek box, it's not like we can open it, I suppose, but I know. When she was on the phone to Think Geek, who are sort of this vast online emporium for nerdy swag of all varieties, it's like the greatest store on earth.
I mean,
it really is. It's like a sort of Sharper Image and Sky Mall combined, but only for dorks. And everything blinks or has makes a Star Trek communicator sound. So I know that some of the stuff that they were planning on sending us, because I believe a few of the items have not yet been released, and so she was all excited to get them because they're sort of beta products, so they haven't gone on sale to the general public yet. Anyway, so I didn't want to ruin the surprise, so I figured I'd kind of wait for her to tell us. But but with that box in particular, and you all know what I'm talking about, where it's just the big cardboard box, and then there's a strip of packing tape across the top in the middle that goes down on either side, and so you just take your keys or your knife or your whatever, and you just slide it underneath the flaps, cut the tape on either side, and then if you need to, you slide the knife across the top, and you slit the tape lengthwise, and then you open it up. See, that's the fastest way to do that. You can't really, that's not necessary with the Triscuit box. If I could open the Think Geek box the way that I could the Triscuits, where I just take my hand and I stick it underneath and I just sort of Hulk it open, then I would absolutely do that. But that's not really, that option of opening has been closed off to me because I'm weak and frail, Dawn. So.
I think it may be because I don't want to put a box back on my kitchen, the shelves, with a torn up top on it.
Because people are going to judge you? It's a box of Triscuits.
No, because it'll bother me when I see it.
Oh, see, that's the thing that doesn't bother me at all, because you just... I'm OCD about a lot of things, but usually they're not about things. Here's the thing about my OCD and about my compulsion to tidy things and order things in a certain way, is that And if I, and by the way, I'm just saying that if either of us was grumpy early on, and I'm not saying that's the case, this is almost certainly the way to remedy that, just by talking about OCD behavior. Yeah. Because even just talking about anal retentive compulsive straightening and tidying and ordering and kneading of things actually has... It actually has this sort of placebo effect, as though I am neatening and straightening my own life and my own fractured mind. But here's the thing about all my neat freakism. It's almost solely centered on work. If you go to my house, it's not like I don't like things in a certain place at home. I mean, I guess I kind of do. And at home, I have places where things go. In other words, there's a place where my shoes go, and there's a place where my shirts go, and, you know, whatever. But it's like, you know, if I don't put stuff away, it doesn't drive me all that crazy. Like, you know, if I'm feeling kind of tired, or if I'm just, you know, whatever, you know, shoes don't always get put away necessarily, like, in the stack where they're supposed to go, because I got a whole thing for my shoes, but I don't always follow it. That, I think that's the difference, is I have ritual and routine at home, or I at least have placement, but I don't necessarily follow it all the time. Sometimes my laundry goes for a while, I don't get it done. Sometimes a box of cereal gets left out on the counter, I don't get it put away. So I have a place for things, but if I don't necessarily hew to that, it's not like it just causes me all kinds of agita or something. Whereas here, or in like any workplace, in any studio where I've ever worked, I not only have a routine and I not only have a place where everything's going, but it's like I have to follow it. Or otherwise it just... Well, you've seen me after the show with Greg and Sarah, where it's like I am just compulsively putting everything back, and I'm folding the cords, and I'm tucking cables back, and I'm turning the board off, and I'm putting all the meters at zero, and again, I'm putting everything back in the drawer, and everything gets folded up, and I have these little pieces of paper that go on our laptops that say, like, don't press buttons on this, it's broadcasting, you know, my genius, don't interfere. And that all has to be done before I leave the studio. I can't leave the studio after the show until everything's put away. But, like, with Triscuits at home, like, it didn't really matter, because I just shoved the thing down inside, I fold up the bag, and I just jam it back into the cupboard. So, I think you're way more onto the home aesthetic tip than I am. Hmm. For me, that is solely focused on this, our place of business. Let's see. Anyway, so to recap, we got Corpse Watch coming up today. Geek Watch, Taser Watch, Top 5 coming up, one of two, and we'll figure out which one of those we're going to do later on. A musical request we may or may not get to. We get the Mad Men recap last night, episode 9, and Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Monday.
Oregon's minimum wage will be going up. A man is accused of setting his girlfriend's house on fire. And good news, everyone, the recession ended in June of last year.
Awesome. Wait, what?
That's what they say.
June, you're saying?
June.
Because I could swear that...
Of last year.
I may be missing something, but I'm pretty sure I had a job in June of last year. Like a job that wasn't here. All right. Well, knows what I know. And so forth. It is 503-505-6964. And by the way, just here's the reason I consumed all those Triscuits over the weekend. Lest anybody think that I just have some sort of a Triscuit, like I'm a fetishist for it or something. So when I was buying all the Triscuits for the show on Fridays, I said I bought a duplicate box, you know, the one additional of each to take home. And then this weekend was the big, like the big final push to get all the copy editing done on this book, which is just... I'm not complaining about it, but it is just one of those things where after a while you shut your eyes and you start to see ellipses and semicolons like floating everywhere, and it's like, and you get to the point where you just don't want to think about words at all. Like, you just want to sit and just stare like blankly at a wall for long periods of time. And the other thing that you don't want to do is just take a lot of time out to eat, because then it's like you just know you're going to get hopelessly behind, because the deal is it had to be sent off, because everything in the entire world needs to be based on the goddamn Eastern time zone. Effectively robbing me of 3 additional hours of work. So because everything's got to be sent up to New York, where all the important people work, because everybody on the East Coast apparently a piker. None of us matter out here. Everything's got to be based in Manhattan. So everything had to be done essentially by the time I went to bed last night. So you don't want to take any time out or anything, because you just never get caught up. And so if it could not be consumed from one hand while I was typing with the other hand, then it's like I didn't eat it this weekend. And so really my entire diet consisted of those 3 boxes of Triscuits that I purchased on Friday, and then just like various wedges of cheese. That's all it was. It was like wedges of cheese and like Kraft singles or whatever the hell, you know. And then like those little... And the one exception I made to that, because this is a sort of messy product, but it's fantastic. Have you had the Laughing Cow cheese wedges that come in the wheel? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the wheel of cheese, but then it's already wedged out for
yeah.
you. And those can get a little messy because it's sort of like a cream,
yeah,
like a creamy sort of a cheese.
Soft goat cheese.
But I mean, so that was not like an all the time thing. That was a thing that I had sort of sporadically throughout the weekend.
Although I always think that's goat cheese because it's really soft, but I guess it's not goat cheese because it's laughing cow.
I don't know. Maybe the cow is laughing because the goat was milked right in front of him and the cow got to go, go to the movies or something. Maybe it was like, now it's not me that took that to the milking machine, is it, Mr. Smarty Pants? That's right. That's just my imaginings right there. It's my...
Oh, that makes me happy.
That's my feverish creative energy on display right there, Don Taylor. That is the... That's the kind of sparkling imaginative wit that will be on display in bookstores everywhere at some point, like 9 years from now.
I think it's now every single time I see or hear mention of Laughing Cow, that's going to be in my head that's yes. why the cow is laughing.
That's what I'm saying.
I thank you for that.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was my whole weekend. It's just ingesting cheese and Triscuits, and just sitting there, just trying to figure out. I don't know. Is it a hyphen or is it a dash? Are they the same thing? Crap, whatever. So anyway, but it's done. It's done. It's done. And it was done without interruption, by the way, because my wife, who I love, was gone all weekend. And even better, it was like a two birds, one stone. It was like five birds with one stone. So I got the editing thing done. Got the Triscuits consumed, so they are no longer around to taunt me. Because if I wasn't going to eat them, then it's like they would just sit there and they would call to me in the middle of the night. Like I'd be trying to slumber away and they would just be sort of going, Rick, Rick. And then I would have to go to the kitchen and I would just end up standing over the trash and eating them like in my underwear. So I got that done. Lara was gone this weekend, which means I didn't have any interruptions. Nobody, not that she bothers me as such, but I was not obligated to leave my home office and have, family time. And here's another time of kind of family time I'm not going to have. Lara actually was gone visiting my mother. So it was just like, it was beautiful. It was like a backdraft. It was like a fire that puts itself out. So she was gone, and she was gone hanging out with my mom, which means that's now something that I don't have to do. So it was really just, it was like the most glorious weekend. If I could just go back and live this weekend on a kind of endless loop, I think I would. I wouldn't even be here. I'd just be at home, just sort of cycling that over and over again.
I was really happy for you until a minute ago, and then about 15 seconds ago, it just, your joy at your weekend then just started making me angry.
Who's grumpy now, Grumpykins?
Because, I had this great weekend. The weekend was so full of promise, Rick Emerson. We had the Retro Gaming Expo, had the Portland Pirate Festival. I had work I needed to catch up on, cleaning my house because my birthday is next weekend and want my apartment to be clean. All these things going on. And then, 4 p.m. after the show was over, I was sitting with you. We were doing some paperwork. I started sniffling. You got me a Kleenex. It was very nice of you. Got me a tissue. It sounds nice of you, but really it was your way of going, stop making that snarking noise.
Now, you're doing that thing where you're projecting thoughts onto me that I did not have, and that even if I'd had them, you would have no way of being aware of.
But anyway, and then by the time I got home, I was sneezing and I was sick, and it was just full-blown sick all weekend. And basically my entire weekend consisted of taking cold medicine, sleeping for about an hour and a half, waking up, toddling out to the living room, eating some toast, poking around the internet, taking more cold medicine, going back to sleep for an hour and a half, just rinse, repeat over and over again for 2 days. Finally started feeling human about 9 o'clock last night, just in time for me to go, hooray, the weekend's over. That was my entire weekend.
Awesome.
So,
all right.
So I'm glad you got a lot of wonderful things.
My weekend was fantastic. My weekend was great.
You had a good weekend.
I was at the top of my game this weekend, Don. I'd never felt better. I was alive and full of vim and vigor and promise.
That's awesome.
Fit with the bright hope of a new day. All right. It's 503-505-6964. Without further ado, we got our Mad Men review coming up later on. Mad Men recap for last night, a musical request, the top five. And tomorrow, turns out the Week in Geek tomorrow. Aaron said he was having some internet connectivity issues, as they say. So apparently he recorded the Week in Geek, wasn't able to send it. He will actually get that to us tomorrow, he told me, via the internet. All right. At the news desk, here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Starting next year, the minimum wage in Oregon is going up by 10 cents an hour to $8.50. Oregon voters approved a ballot measure in 2002 that requires an adjustment to minimum wage if inflation changes, as measured by the Consumer Price Index. Oregon and Washington are among 10 states that adjust the wage based on the index. Washington will announce its adjustment next week. State Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian said the adjustment will help Oregon's economy recover and prevent the lowest wage earners from falling behind inflation.
That's the thing they say, as though the minimum wage even keeps up with inflation. I'm not even sure that the minimum wage keeps up with the poverty level. What is the poverty level? Like, you were a journalist, like 20 grand or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So if you were, I mean, and it might, I mean, it's entirely, hold on, that's a thing I got to know now. So the minimum wage is going to be what?
$8.50.
So $8.50. I mean, it probably does. I wonder how much that actually is a year, though. Let's
well,
see if I can actually
10,
get this to work.
10 years ago when I was working for Starbucks, I was making $7.50, and that was 25 cents an hour more than the minimum wage then. So we are now making roughly $1 an hour more minimum wage than you were 10 years ago.
Okay, so $8.50 times 40 equals 40 times what? And there's 52 weeks in a year, right? Mm-hmm. 52 equals. Yeah. How much, if you had to guess right now, just a ballpark. Okay. I mean, and we're not math folk,
no,
but I mean, would you?
I don't do math. I have no idea.
Well, guess then from, is it 15 to 20 or 20 to 25? Or 25 to 30?
15 to 20.
It is $17,680. So unless they have somehow adjusted the poverty rate, and I'm pretty sure they haven't, the poverty line was like at 21,000 or something, and that was like 5 years ago, the last time I actually bothered to learn it. So now if you're making so-called minimum wage, which you would think of it would be the same thing as a living wage, which it is not. Not only does it not keep up with inflation, it actually doesn't even get you above 18 grand a year. And that's before taxes, by the way. That is your gross. That's not your net. That's a $17,680 gross a year. Jesus, God almighty. All right, here's Don Taylor. Glad the recession's over, though.
It's not, though. Oh, I mean, wait, it is. Wait, no. Good news.
What's happening?
The longest recession in the country has endured since the Great Depression ended in June 2009, Rick. The National Bureau of Economic Research, a panel of academic economists based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, said the recession lasted 18 months. It started in December of 2007 and ended in June 2009. So there you go. It previously, the longest post-World War II downturns were 73 to 75 and 81 to 82.
Do they explain in there, and I this is one of those things that I used to know, or that Kristen Bowie could explain to me probably, what a recession is, two quarters in a row of negative financial growth, right, or economic growth?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So how is that even possible? Well, I guess, okay, so what was June of last year? So June of 2009.
Yeah, July to September, the quarter July to September, the economy apparently started growing again after a record four straight quarters of declines.
I don't even know what that means, though, when they say the economy. I mean, which is one of those things that other people say, well, what do you mean? It's self-explanatory. But I don't know what that means. Does that mean jobs?
Well, they looked at figures that make up the nation's gross domestic product, which measures the total value of goods and services produced within the United States, and also reviewed incomes, employment, and industrial activity.
So is the total amount of goods and services sold or manufactured?
Produced.
Well, see, but that seems like those seem like two different things altogether, and that doesn't seem like the adequate measure by which you would measure it. Because if you're just making a factory full of cars and nobody buys them, how does that count as income?
I don't know.
This doesn't make any sense at all. I trust Ali Velshi and his variety of lavender ties before I trust this.
President Barack Obama told us we shouldn't get too excited about the fact that the recession ended.
Done and done.
Back in 2009.
Yeah, okay, all right. Consider that checked off, yeah. Then. All right. excitement dampened and tempered. I mean, seriously, this is one of those things that I want to file it away, and I want to go find some guy who understands the economy and just say, like, explain this to me. Because last year, they added like another 40,000 people or something to the unemployment roll. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying the government is just like flat out lying to us, but I am saying that this is, I believe, what they would call on The Wire. This is juking the stats, I think, is where they're taking something from one column and they're sticking it in another column so that it doesn't say what it obviously says. That's just my estimation. Here's Don Taylor.
The mothers of two American hikers who are still jailed in Iran were at a press conference with newly freed hiker Sarah Shord today in New York. The mother of Shane Bauer, Cindy Hickey, says it's time to release her son and Josh Fatal, too.
I was very excited for Sarah to be free for our families and also Nora and Sarah. However, the bittersweet truth is Shane and Josh aren't home. We really want them home. They're innocent. It's the same case. They need to be returned.
Maybe it's time that we also tell your kids not to hike in Iran. Maybe. I mean, just, you know, I mean, call me crazy. But of all the places in the world that you could probably go, like, you know, walk, maybe Iran might not be at the top of your list from now on, huh? What do you think?
Iran's president says Shurd was released on humanitarian grounds after experiencing some health issues while imprisoned. Here's what she said about that Sunday at a press conference in New York.
I had many concerns while I was in prison about my health. And thankfully, the doctors in Oman have reassured me that I am physically well.
In Oman?
Apparently, the Iranian doctors say, you're okay.
All right.
I don't know.
I thought the... Let me try that one more time.
Concerns while I was in prison about my health. And thankfully, the doctors in Oman have reassured me that I am physically well.
All right. Now, I know I'm being an idiot American here, but is Oman, like... Is that a country? Is it a city? Is that a... What is Oman?
I believe it's a city.
It's a city. It's a city in somewhere.
In Iran.
All right. Okay.
I could be wrong.
All right. It really does sort of puzzle me. I mean, is there some different kind of dirt they have in Iran that you can only, you know, no, you haven't really walked until you've walked on the dirt there. I mean, or did they just, was it some sort of like an ill-advised, like a party game or a dare where they just put a bunch of bad countries in a bag and drew out the, you know, hold on a second, Zagreb. All right, what about you, Phil? I'm
terribly embarrassed. Oman is a country, right, by the way. It's it's an Arab country.
See, this is the difference between you and me. I was not embarrassed at all. I just came right out with, don't know where it is.
Oh, apparently it's what we call Jordan now. We call it Oman.
Apparently we don't call it Jordan now. We call it Oman. Yeah. Is it no longer Jordan?
I don't know. I
well, you can't give me half facts.
I feel that's stupid now.
You can't just throw out half completed sentences at me.
I start to think I know things, and then it turns out that I know nothing.
What do you mean? It's what we call Jordan now.
Hold on.
Who is we? Is this your people who call it Maize? I don't understand.
Yes, it's what the Native Americans call it. Oman.
Okay.
Okay. Hold on.
Is this something, let me ask you this, is this something you're gleaning from Wikipedia or from like random gibber in the text box who could just be some guy screwing with you?
It could be just somebody screwing with
you. So you're just, you're doing a Ron Burgundy right now. You're just passing along things that were written on the screen, like without actually.
That's what I do, though. I just pass the screen, these pieces of paper. I just read stuff. I know nothing. I just read the words. I just say the words. I'm basically a...
You're filtering everything through kind of a black prism today, aren't you?
You spent 2 days sitting in a chair drinking tea and going, I think I'm going to die.
So also, spent this morning in part of Legion of News drinking vodka, so there's that as well. Okay.
That please should make tell me that, happier, though.
Please tell me that you did that immediately after taking cold medication, or that it's even now interacting with other chemicals in your body.
Oh, yes.
That's fantastic. That's always the road to stability. All right, here's Don Taylor.
California. Actually, let's do the Corpse Watch.
Let's do the Corpse Watch. Are we done with the Iran cuts? Is that the
more?
End of that particular road?
Yeah, no, that was it.
All right,
unless
just checking.
There were more.
All right, fantastic.
No, that was it.
Here's your Corpse Watch for whatever the hell this is. This is Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
A California man accused of torturing and killing his daughter acknowledged in testimony Monday that he kept the 21-year-old's bullet-riddled body in the freezer of his mobile home for 2 years, but claimed he was not responsible for her death. Clarence Butterfield, 57, said he found his daughter Rebecca dead when he returned home from running errands on December 26, 2006, and put her in the freezer because he thought no one would believe his innocence. It was kind of stressful to walk in and see your daughter dead, he said.
Kind of stressful, not actually stressful.
I didn't know what to do. Butterfield also said he hoped she would be resurrected and planned to hold on to the body for at least 7 years. The former San Clemente man is charged with murder and assault with a firearm and could face life in prison without a chance of parole if convicted. Prosecutors contend he shot his daughter 7 times with a small caliber gun in the leg, foot, knee, and the side of her head, and elsewhere to torture her, then hogtied her and stuffed her into the RV's freezer, where she suffocated. Butterfield continued to live in the 1995 Chevrolet Tioga in Orange County until he was stopped for a traffic violation in September 2008, and authorities discovered he was wanted in Nevada on unrelated charges.
So it wasn't even like a house. It was a, what do you say, a trailer?
Yeah, an RV. He was actually living
just
in
towing it along behind his behind his vehicle, daughter and son.
He was sent to Nevada to serve his time, and the RV was left in the alley of an acquaintance's business in Capistrano Beach until it was towed the next month. Employees of the San Clemente Towing Company discovered the badly decomposed body wrapped in plastic inside the unplugged freezer, which was sealed with duct tape.
Jesus, God. No, no.
And so he looks like crazy Brian Posehn.
And just the, wow, he really does. This is... Okay, this is a deeply unnerving individual right now. This is, we use that phrase a lot, like eyes that are stealing your soul, but this is really one where he's just like, he's looking all the way, he's looking all the way through you and back out, you know, the other side. So 7 years he was holding on to her because she was going to resurrect. Is that like some Jehovah's Witness thing or something?
Well, he also shot her seven times, so apparently there was something going on there with the number seven.
All right, so this is, okay, so he's crazy in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that would go without saying. All right. When he returned home from running, put her in the freezer because he thought no one would believe his innocence. I wouldn't believe this guy to be innocent of anything. He does have, he has this sort of like weird Donald Pleasance thing going on too. Like sometimes the shaven-headed guys get where he arches his eyebrows and then his forehead, like his entire scalp wrinkles up in like a sinister fashion. All right. There's your corpse watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Still to come, our Mad Men recap, also a top five, and we'll try to get to this musical request. Also, Geek Watch, Taser Watch on the way. Don't forget, when you're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program and you find yourself stunned, amazed, you find yourself enraptured by all of the glorious entertainment provided to you with a low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, you can thank for that, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. Castalia Language Center, which you can find out more about at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com is a small Spanish language school located in downtown Portland, Oregon. So if you're an adult and you took some Spanish in high school, you took a little bit in college, or it's that thing where, or if you're me, and I pray for your sake that you are not, you'll find yourself in that situation where you think for just a moment that, like, you know how to say something in Spanish. And you'll be in some social situation, or you'll be in some city, some part of the country, whatever, where you're in a situation where it would be advantageous to know Spanish. And then you kind of reach for it, and you know what? And it's like a jar on a shelf that you can't quite grab, where your fingernails are just, like, sort of barely brushing it. And you feel like you used to know how to say that, but no longer. Here's the thing. Whether you are just starting out or whether you are taking a sort of intermediate class or whether you actually speak Spanish conversationally but just want to fine-tune it, just want to brush up, Castalia Language Center, which you can find out more about at PortlandSpanish.com, they can handle all of those things. And they limit class sizes to 8 people, and it's adults only, which means you're going to get near individual attention and you're going to be learning in the same way and at the same rate, the same time, all of that, as the other people in the class. Because kids and adults just they learn these things differently. They've also got classes different hours, different days, so they can find something works with your schedule. Find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. It is run by Clara Gremmel, who is a native Spanish speaker. She's from Argentina. She now is here running Castalia Language Center in downtown Portland. Find out more about it, about this, the whole school and everything they offer at PortlandSpanish.com. Still on the way, the Mad Men recap, the Taser Watch, and more. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere.
Sweet and floral prints. My mind begins the orange.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Still to come, we have the top five today. And here's what I got prepared. I got two different top fives. I got, I almost don't even want to tell you what they are. I almost just want to make it like a choice one, choice two. And then have you kind of, you know, do like a blind pick of this.
What if you gave me like just two words? Like a word that would, you know, kind of relate to either. And then if I choose which of those two words most appeals to me.
Like to describe each of them with a single adjective? You know, an adjective for each?
Describe or just, you know, say, you know, cheese or armchair. You know, something like that.
Maybe
only something that would actually relate to the top fives.
So not cheese or armchair. I mean, maybe. You don't know.
I don't know.
All right. This has become way harder than I thought it was going to be all of a sudden. Well, we'll figure it out. So I got two top fives here. A musical request, and we have a Geek Watch on the way, Taser Watch, Mad Men recap, and all that at the news desk. This is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Clark County deputies said they are investigating a house fire that left a Vancouver man with severe burns. Deputies responded to a domestic disturbance call on Northeast 83rd Street about 6 p.m. Friday and said they learned a man had doused his 23-year-old girlfriend with gasoline before setting her home on fire. The girlfriend, her son, and other family members safely escaped the house. Authorities said they later found the suspect, 23-year-old David Miller, about a mile from home. Miller sustained severe burns to his hands, arms, and legs as he lit the fire, according to deputies. Medics took him to Legacy Emmanuel Hospital in Portland, where he was treated for his injuries. The victim also went to a nearby hospital where she was treated and released. The investigation is ongoing.
Just fire seems like the most ill-advised tool to make any kind of a point. I mean, that is really just that is talking about breaking way too many eggs to make an omelet. I mean, I just don't understand that.
Although, honestly, though, haven't you been involved with people that, you know, you wouldn't mind seeing them on fire?
Well, but that's not really
the
issue.
Just me.
That's not really. But see, that's immaterial. I'm just saying it seems like a thing that's just way too tricky to operate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's because, again, like this guy, did he not set himself ablaze here?
Well, yeah.
And like one out of every two stories where it's like the fire began when he was attempting to burn his girlfriend's clothing on the front lawn. And then the guy always looks down and then his pants are, you know, in flagrante.
Yeah. So, I don't think people really think about how, you know, how splashy the. The accelerants are that they're using.
No, and also the fact that fire, you know, it doesn't really stay in one place. Fire, it's not a dog, friends. It doesn't respond to commands. You sit, stay, fire, stay, no. You know, it's, you know.
That would be an awesome superpower to have, though, wouldn't it? If you could control fire, you know, like a well-trained dog.
Well, that's what the Human Torch does, doesn't he?
Except he doesn't say sit and stay.
No, but he should have to. He should have to do some sort of a rollover, kill, you know, and then just... Well, in any event, I was going to do another backdraft reference, but I can only do one of those per show. I can't. There's like a one backdraft, you know, quote per program rule here. Here is Dawn Taylor.
The third season premiere of Castle is upon us, and fans of the show know Richard Castle went through the proverbial ringer in season two. His daughter was maturing faster than Castle himself, and his love for Detective Kate Beckett was not reciprocated. Nathan Fillion breaks down Castle's situation.
By the way, I should tell you that when we had Dave Mustaine from Megadeth on the show a couple weeks ago, and then it was the same week we had Terry Brooks as the sci-fi fantasy author, so... I had told Cheryl, you know, and I've done this before where I put like a bounty on things. Like I did this with Greg, where I, you know, when Greg Nibbler was the PA for the show, I said, if you ever get, I had like three people. It was Alice Cooper, Robert Plant, and I can never remember who the other one, I think the third one was Stan Freberg, who's like 1,000 years old and didn't really do public appearances anymore. But I said, if you can get anybody on this list as a guest, you know, like I'll give you a bottle of whatever it is you drink. And Cheryl doesn't really abuse herself with strong liquor the way that most people I know do. So I was trying to find a way to sort of put a bounty on certain guests. And when I saw Dave Mustaine was going to be in town, I said, hey, come into town. We got Dave Mustaine, Terry Brooks. So if you can, you know, get either of these folks, and it's like, you know, I'll owe you. And apparently I had said to her at one point in the past that I would, quote, get Nathan Fillion for her, like in a sort of get in the bag, you're coming with me kind of a way. So then fast forward to a couple weeks ago when Cheryl gets Dave Mustaine and Terry Brooks as guests on the show in 1 week, and she just informed me that it was now time for me to make good on my promise of like binding him and delivering to her like he was the Christmas goose or something. Then she reminded me of that by sending me, we'll play the Fillion clip in a second, but she reminded me by that by saying that apparently there's now some lame money for charity thing going on where you can bid to have a celebrity follow you on Twitter. And I think like Jessica Alba was going for like $11,000 or something. But Nathan Fillion, who I think was only at $1,100, which is just sad, which is just demonstrates all that is wrong with this country. So she was telling me that it was timed. And also, if you were the winning bid to have Nathan Fillion follow you on Twitter, he would not only follow you on Twitter for a week, he would call you while shirtless. He would actually just go, "Hey, it's Nathan Fillion. I'm shirtless and following you on Twitter now." Click. And then like that was the end. So I was informed that was a thing that I needed to do for Cheryl.
And did you?
No. Are you kidding? No.
You won't even buy us a case of Vizo for the office.
Well, not you. I mean, I'll buy a case of Vizo, but it's the you know, for you part where it all falls apart. No, I don't think so. Let's see. People say, like, that man's generosity, you know, knows no bounds. Mine knows all kinds of bounds. It's nothing. It is, in fact, it's generosity that is made entirely of bounds. What have we got here? This is Castle Fillion?
Yes.
All right. So this is Nathan Fillion talking about
the... I completely forgot what we were talking... I thought we were done with this. I was waiting for something else now.
You know what would help that? More vodka. Here's Nathan Fillion.
End of season two, Castle was a little down. Here's a guy who's... His life is a bit of a fantasy. His life is a bit of a playground. He's always kind of doing whatever he wants. And reality kind of came crashing down on Castle in that... He had responsibilities. He had to finish his book. He had to face the fact that his daughter was growing up, and you know, these summer trips with him weren't going to be a priority anymore.
It was bizarre.
And that I think the big thing is that his
apparently got mail.
Romantic interest in Quebec was interested in someone else, and you know, on her way. Away from him, and that was kind of a downer for Castle. It was a reality check, and he had to accept it. He had to accept that.
So here's the thing: I don't really. I watched the first. I don't know, like five or six. First of all, the weirdest thing about that Windows noise is your computer's actually not even plugged in.
No, that wasn't me.
And I'm running a Mac.
Yeah.
So
that was just part of the audio file, I believe.
So that was actually the question. Whoever it actually was, it was interviewing Nathan Fillion. There was just sort of had their Windows machine plugged in, and that's why the first thing I do whenever I do have to use some sort of a Windows device, I go into the system file and I just delete those sounds. I delete the Windows sounds completely off the computer so they can't play. But you watch Castle? You did watch Castle?
Yeah, I watched Castle.
All right, because I think Cheryl watches it too, and I tried. I just couldn't make it work. I couldn't watch it. It was just too. It's not like it's a bad show, and he's a likable guy. It was just like it was.
It's popcorn entertainment. It's very lightweight. It's, you know, it's the TV equivalent of, you know, an airport novel. You know.
Yeah, I think that's. It's not like I have a problem with it with a show being light or a show being whimsical, but I just felt like it was. I don't know. It was just something about the tone. It was just a little too. It was a little too airy for me. I don't know. And I think also that I couldn't. I didn't like the chick that played the detective, whatever her name is, the failed romantic. Because they were doing. I understand the whole will they or won't they, Dave and Maddie, whatever. I mean, that's a time honored tradition, and you know. But there's like a way to do it so it's not just like hitting you in the face.
Yeah.
And this show did not do it that way. And I think that was my first thing. Is like the first time she comes on screen, you just say to yourself. You can hear the announcer going, "And now, the romantic interest, with whom entanglements will be unnecessarily elongated for many, many years before being resolved."
Now, I watch it purely because of Nathan Fillion, because Nathan Fillion is dreamy.
Yeah, he really is. Well, that's the thing. It's the same reason I sat through Waitress, just sitting there going, well, all right, Adrienne Shelley's dead, and this is Nathan Fillion. I guess I owe it to them to watch, you know, and just sort of sitting there, just like biding my time, waiting for it to be done. The other great thing about him is that I can't remember if I saw this or if I just heard it described. Maybe Cheryl told me about it. Where there was like on Castle, there was a Halloween episode where he actually dressed up as Mal Reynolds.
Yeah.
See, and you got to give it up to that guy.
And his daughter was telling us, like, really? Seriously? The space cowboy again?
Yeah. I mean,
That's awesome. I mean, how can you not? How can you not? I should drag. We've done a couple interviews with him. I should drag those out of the archives. I will play those maybe this weekend because the third season of Castle is getting underway. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here is your, like, we didn't just do a big nerdy. Mal Reynolds is the best captain ever. Here's your Geek Watch from Monday.
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is your Geek Watch for Monday, brought to you, of course, by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about him and his home or office solutions for your carpet, anything you might walk on later on in the program. Here's Don Taylor.
English fantasy author Sir Terry Pratchett says he was so excited after being knighted by the Queen that he decided to make his own sword to equip himself for his new status.
Wow. Sometimes we say Geek Watch, and then it's like it doesn't, you know, it delivers on varying levels. This really is like, this is at 10.
It was not enough, however, simply to find some metal and get a blacksmith to bash it into shape. Pratchett, believing his sword would not truly be his own unless it was made from metal he had produced, found a field with deposits of iron ore near his home in Wiltshire, west of London. He gathered the deposits and smelted the iron ore himself. The author, 62, who has sold about 65 million copies of his books, which include the Discworld series, said, "Most of my life I've been producing stuff which is intangible, and so it's amazing the achievement you feel when you've made something which is really real." With the help of his friend Jake Keane, an expert on ancient metal-making techniques, the author dug up 81 kilograms of ore and smelted it in the grounds of his house using a makeshift kiln built from clay and hay and fueled with damp sheep manure. Pratchett, who has Alzheimer's disease, also said he had thrown in several pieces of meteorites. Thunderbolt iron, you see. Highly magical. You've got to chuck that stuff in whether you believe in it or not.
Wow.
After days of hammering the metal into bars, he took it to a blacksmith, whom he helped to shape it into a blade, which was finished with silverwork. Pratchett has stored the sword, which he completed last year, in a secret location, apparently concerned about authorities taking an interest in it. He said, "It annoys me that knights aren't allowed to carry their swords. That would be knife crime."
Okay, I think he knows he's not really a knight, right? I mean, I know he's ailing and so forth. So I wonder if that's a thing where fantasy and reality are blending just a hair for Mr. Pratchett.
I think he's just enjoying the entire process of being knighted fully as possible.
And so he's going to keep the sword like stashed somewhere? It's just sort of like it's in a secret room.
Yeah, apparently so.
Well, that's pretty great. I would like to imagine that he has like one of those sort of that he has like a sort of hobbit hole or something that maybe he's hidden like inside a hillside. Where there's some sort of a magical incantation he requires to open the side of the mountain to
and
get in.
There's this great picture of him too. I mean, even though he is ailing and has Alzheimer's, everything, he looks
wow.
That hat is just so awesome. This picture of it. Listeners are encouraged to go seek out this picture, or we'll link to it on the Facebook page.
This is awesome. He looks like equal parts Dr. Demento and James Randi. That's awesome. This is a fantastic photo. I want to look exactly like this, except possibly without the top hat, because I don't think I can make that work.
Oh, the hat is good,
no,
though.
But it's good on him.
He looks dapper.
Yeah, no, he totally makes it work. That's the sort of thing. I'm not a hat guy. I can't make hats work. Some guys can rock the hat. I, myself, it also helps that he's, like a wizard or whatever.
See, I could see you in kind of a small Rat Pack fedora.
Now, the only time
I've ever...
Kind
of a Joey Bishop kind of a hat.
Why got to be Joey Bishop? What is that about?
I'm just thinking
of you. Your mom's Joey Bishop. So's your face. All right. At least I'm not Peter Lawford, I suppose.
I'm just thinking Sammy and Joey Bishop wore the smaller fedora type hats.
What are you trying to say? Give me a small hat. What are you trying to imply there, Don?
I'm just thinking it that particular style would look more attractive.
Here's the thing. I'm just effing with you now because your thing that I was in a bad mood. So now I'm just like randomly going to throw disproportionately angry responses to things.
Although now that I think about it, if you liken someone to a member of the Rat Pack and you immediately go to Joey Bishop, you deserve to be yelled at.
No, it's true. I mean, it's like I said,
deserved that.
I'm just saying that the only time I've ever had, I think literally the only time I have, except when I was in high school, which is like, there's this something that goes on in the minds of guys who are in drama in high school where they all think that they need to wear like hats or black dusters. And I don't know why. I don't know what that's all about. I don't know why guys in drama class. And listen, I'm one of you, or was. I have a St. Genesius medal somewhere at home, you bastards. So look,
I dated a guy in high school who had a trench coat that he had signed by Fee Waybill of the Tombs.
Oh, come on, really? Mr. Waybill, I have a silver marker. Will you please just sign my trench coat? Thank you. Siege of Beauty is the best song ever recorded. But I don't know what it is with guys. I mean, I understand the black trench coat thing, I guess. I mean, in a pre-Columbine era, at least, it was, you know, even then it was sort of, you know, had a little hint of Dr. Huey and Menace, I guess, to it. But the thing with drama guys thinking they can rock the fedora, there's, look, mm-hmm. friend, there's no one who makes the fedora work less than a drama guy. There's just no way around that. I don't know. But I don't know. I am always fascinated by certain societal subsets that all behave in like exactly the same way in certain, you know, like in certain regards with certain facets of their existence for reasons that are never really explained. Like there is no reason, at least that I can figure out, why drama guys should all show up to school with it wearing like a Stetson or something, wearing like a Raymond Chandler hat.
Yeah.
Like they're going to go, like they're a private dick who's going to go put the screws to some guy about a dame.
Well, it's because they're drama guys, because they watch a lot of movies and
but
they.
But why
they
that hat?
Well, you don't have a lot of, there aren't a lot of hat options really available. I mean, you got your standard hats that people wear today.
You got your baseball cap.
And what are you going to do? Show up at school wearing, you know, a straw boater? I mean, if you want to look cool, you go for the fedora.
Is that one of those barbershop hats?
Yeah.
Yeah. At least that would be different. It would be interesting. Anyway, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm just saying it's just one of those things I've noticed, though, that if you put 10 drama guys in a room, like, you know, and you come back an hour later, like half of them will have black trench coats and the other half will have fedoras.
The fedora beats the hell out of the beret.
No, yeah. See, the beret, though, I think that's a thing that drama guys only wear, like in movies. That is a thing, you know who wears the beret in my experience? Drama guys in movies that are written by guys who really weren't in drama.
Well, what is this hat that guys, I keep seeing people wearing, the hipsters wearing, that's like a beret, but they wear it like backwards and it's hanging down the back of their
head. Like a Kangol?
Is that kind of what it is?
Well, that's like Bobby wears that.
Yeah, but he wears it like a real hat. He doesn't wear it backwards. Like it's a like he's wearing a backwards beret or something.
Oh, well,
he wears it like it's intended to be worn.
Well, I think it's a well, see, now I just feel like I'm just treading into waters where if I'm going to start talking about proper wearing of a Kangol, I feel like I am just treading on the thinnest of cultural ices here. Bobby probably knows more than I do, but are you talking about a Kangol or are you talking about like a snap brim hat?
Well, there's also these knit hats, these slouchy knit hats that people put on and they look like you're wearing a beret, just kind of squinching down the back of your head. They're these shapeless, formless things that seem to serve no function, and I don't understand the point of them.
Oh, okay, so we have here, it says, wearing the Kangol backward, you mean like, makes you Samuel L. Jackson gangsta. at least in one's mind's eye, in the imagination, I suppose. But is that what you're talking about? Because, you know, I the first time I ever saw that, this sounds like a weird thing, but of all people in the known world, and you could never guess who I'm going to mention this. Of all people, the first guy that I ever saw, like in person, kind of doing the sort of backward Kangol, who really kind of made it work and you didn't expect it to. Because certain guys, you just see the hat and you go, well, you know, okay, you were, guys, some guys have meant to have the shaved head. Some guys are meant to, you know, wear the hat. Some guys can function well with glasses. Other guys, you put glasses on and they just look terrible. The first guy where I ever saw him wearing something and it's like you wouldn't think in a jillion years that would work and it looked really great was Boy George, of all people. And I interviewed Boy George, and he had the full-on Sam Jackson backward Kangol thing, and it looked fantastic. But you know why?
He's a stylish fella.
But also it's because he was Fat Boy George then. He wasn't Spindly Boy George.
Yeah.
Like Frail Boy George, he would have looked, you know, when he was all strung out. No, I think he was off the junk, and so he was just a huge load. But because he was a little chunkier, he kind of looked like Bob Hoskins, and so as a result, it worked. What was I saying? Anyway, the hat. So he really makes the hat work here, yeah. Mr. Terry Pratchett does. The only time I have ever worn the fedora was at Aaron Duran's wedding, strangely enough, or perhaps not, so speaking of drama nerds, was at Aaron Durant's wedding where like the usher was dressed as Boba Fett, and I had the full three-piece suit on to go with that as well. Yeah, so
people always tell me I look good in hats, but I always feel self-conscious in them because I feel like I'm like in danger of being the fat girl in the hat. You know what I'm talking about.
Is that a known thing, the fat girl in the hat?
It seems far more of an affectation if you're a fat girl wearing a hat.
Well, I don't think I see chicks wearing hats like much at all, period. Not in America, anyway. I mean, that seems to be a continental thing.
You know, there's some people, some women carry them off really well. Kristen Bowie wears a lot of hats. She looks good in them. I don't know. People always say, you look good in hats. And then I just feel really self-conscious because I feel like everyone who's looking at me is just looking, look, she's wearing a hat. Does that make sense?
No, not at all. Here's the thing. It's just between Earth and you, no one's doing that. No one is saying, look at her with the hat.
Well, then
it's not like you have a hook or something.
I'm going to start wearing more hats then, since no one's noticing.
I don't really know that that's considered like a really bold fashion statement at this point, so I wouldn't worry about that. I'd leave that behind.
Wow, someone in the text box says, Don, you're exhausting.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, sir and madam. You speak for us all. There's your Geek Watch for...
I grab Thor's hammer.
And she's grumpy.
The Sons of War Band.
I'm not.
I shall avenge you.
See, you don't get it again. I'm just effing with you.
Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
All right. I mean, not to revisit the whole thing. I'm just saying this is... See, this... I'm not even saying you're grumpy. I am saying... Oh, God.
This is someone calling to tell you to be nicer to me.
You know what? Whoever, they can suck one, if that's the case, because I'll be nice or not nice at my own discretion. Hi, sir, madam, as the case may be, you're on the Rick Emerson. No one's going to tell me when to be mean to you. I'll decide. Hello, hi, who might this be?
Hi, this is Ryan from Zurich.
Okay, wait a minute. You're calling via Skype, yes? Or are you calling on, like, one of your weird, like an iPod Touch thing?
No, I'm calling via Skype.
This is freaking me out.
Wow. Well,
I'm in Zurich.
That is scary clear.
You're in Zurich? Like Zurich, Switzerland, or like Zurich, Ohio?
No, Zurich, Switzerland. I'm normally in London. I'm your normally London caller, but I like calling in when I can.
All right. Can I just speak for everybody here just once again when I note how bizarre and great sounding this sounds? This is, I mean, when you think about the fact that I worked at CBS, which is like a $1 trillion corporation, and CBS, the best we could do is a phone that occasionally worked and still sounded like, are you there? Rick, can you hear me? Can you hear me? I don't think you can hear me. Rick? And now, I mean, look, it's not like the Emerson News Network isn't a bold step into broadcasting, for the future. But this is just bizarre. I'm sorry, I hate to, and I know I sound like a rube because everybody else has been using this technology for like 10 years. But anyway, it just sounds fantastic. What are you doing? If you're normally in London, what are you doing in Zurich?
I'm a technology futurologist. So I talk about techniques and things that are coming in the future. And so I talk up to different companies about what they're going to need to do to deal with the data explosion that's going to consume our lives.
All right. Well, I want you to be really honest here, and you can be. Are you, in fact, calling from the future? And it's true. You can tell us. We won't give it away. The jig will stay with us.
Ever so slightly, because, it's midnight here, and I've already experienced, the day. So it's coming at you. The darkness is coming. Just be prepared. But you'll get through it. Don't worry.
You just turned into Lance Henriksen from Millennium just there. All right.
Why is it that so many members of our audience are so much smarter than we are?
Well, I think...
Well, I'm a future... Well, of course you are.
I think I set the bar pretty low for that, to be honest. But at the same time... So futurology... Now, is that like... Please forgive me. Now, is that a real job term? Or is that a thing... Is that one of those things where it's like the best way you can think of to describe what you do?
It's basically paraphrasing. I mean, the public title that I give is called strategic advisor, which is totally ambiguous. But what it really is it entails just talking about kind of trends that we're experiencing, and here's where we're going. So, I mean...
And so what sort of a question, in other words, what would a company be wanting to figure out specifically? Give me an example of something a company would want to figure out that you would then help steer them on. Like, what is a question they'd want answered?
Okay, so let's say you have like legislation that forces a company to store all of their records. Let's say you're a bank and you have to store all of the copies of the cash checks,
right?
Because you can't float checks anymore. So what that means is it requires a lot more computing power and a lot more storage to store all of that information, because you never know when you gotta cash that check from grandma, you know, 7 years ago. You gotta make sure that that check was valid and didn't bounce.
Right.
So it's just this explosion of information that we have to keep on at all times. And so I talk about that, and people are really intimidated about how to manage all that information. I mean, you know, a long time ago we had, you know, paper trails, but we don't do that anymore. We use computers.
This seems like one of those, I feel like I should be asking you for stock picks or something. It's asking you where to stick my money or whatever. Hey, let me ask you this. So when you're in London, where are you from originally?
I'm from Portland. I actually was born in Hillsborough.
Okay, so you're born in Hillsborough, and then you are in Zurich now, but you live in London. So are you in London for your work? Is that why you are stationed there?
Yeah, so I used to work for the cartoon company Leica, and I actually used one of these products of a company that I worked for. And then I said, hey, can you give me a job? And they said, hey, we have this job in London, but you're going to have to travel all over Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And I was like, oh, well, shit. I know you guys don't like working blue.
That's all right.
So I
would have said the same thing, sir.
Yeah, sorry, whoops. I had this opportunity to actually experience all these different cultures. So, I mean, it's kind of funny because, you know, I my way of connecting and staying connected to home is to listen to you guys, because I was a listener from, you know, 1080 KOTK and all that weird FMAT stuff that happened, and just kind of listening to the progression, it's kind of my way of staying connected. So when you have really corny stuff about, I don't know, some whores in Gresham or something, it's a little bit of home that connects to me.
Awesome. Well, excellent. Well, thank you. And in addition to all this, was there anything else specifically that you called for? Was it a general howdy and hello?
There's this crazy thing that I learned about, and I wanted to tell you guys. There's this sport. When you call it a sport, it's focused in Switzerland. It's not anywhere else. It's called Schwingfest, and you know, you listen to that and you think to yourself, well, what the hell is a Schwingfest? It kind of sounds gross. And so I asked, I was like, what the heck is a Schwingfest? And apparently it's like Greco-Roman wrestling, but each person is connected to a belt. And the idea is that you have to knock the other person down with this belt, i.e. you have to swing them off. And I don't know. It was just really obscure and strange, and I wanted to tell you about Schwingfest. You could probably look it up on Wikipedia or something.
Is this like one of those things like rolling wheels of cheese down a hill or something that, like, you know, that like started in a village 500 years ago and now there's an entire industry based on it, and they, you know, everybody takes a week off of work?
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, you know, in Europe they need to find an excuse to not. So I think Schwingfest was probably at least worth a week.
Awesome. Well,
anyway,
thank you. Thank you so much for, I was going to say calling us, but for contacting us here. Then this is the thing where you just, via Skype, you actually just use the Rick Emerson Show username as opposed to actually calling.
Yeah. I mean, I could call because I actually kept my Portland number and it rings in London. But I think I might as well use technology to.
Oh, no, it sounds fantastic. It's just one of those things where I am always on the receiving end. Like, I don't, unless I'm calling somebody here in Portland using Skype, it's like I very rarely call out on it. So I'm always intrigued. And Don, I think, would say the same thing, that even though we've had a few people who have actually contacted us directly via Skype using the Rick Emerson Show username, it always just like blows our minds how fantastic it sounds. I mean, it really is just astonishing.
I mean, it's kind of cool because if you have your caller ID on your Skype, you could actually identify your callers before they actually call. So you could actually say, oh, Randy, the postman, you're the third time caller this week. Why do you have to talk to us again?
And actually, now that I'm looking at the screen, it actually does say your name. It does say Ryan here. So in the future, we'll know that so here's the thing, just from now on, not to be a guy who just feels like everybody has to be saddled with a name, but I swear to God, you are Ryan from the future from now on.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm Seamus.
Awesome. All right, my friend. Thank you for listening. You call us anytime.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go. That's Ryan calling from the future.
Wow, let me just,
By Grabthar's hammer.
Just again.
By the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
I don't even know we were still in the Geek Watch or not, but...
loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
It is an effed up time to be alive. It is a strange, strange time. Jesus Christ. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. See, now I just want to have the fighting off the urge to use the whole... At some point in the future, you might find yourself in need of a carpet cleaner.
You didn't fight it off at all.
No,
you actually
I just did it. Well, anyway, if you're asking yourself, how are these future calls possible? That was really just mind-blowing. I mean, it's just, I know I should stop freaking me out. Here's the thing.
No, it freaks me out, too. It's because they sound clearer on the Skype than we sound.
Like here?
Here, through our headphones, on the microphones.
The weird thing about that is like, it shouldn't be strange sounding, because at radio stations for like 15 years, we've had ISDN lines that we use to interview people and to like, if you hear like our voice guy, like, you know, like if you're listening to a radio station and you hear a guy going, you're listening to Hot 105, the guy who is like sort of the voice of the station, he's always like in another state and he just sends those to you via ISDN. They'll do the recording session live over ISDN. So that shouldn't weird me out, but it just does for some reason. I don't know why. It's all very strange. Mr. Michael Beatty, the owner and proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, you can contact him at 971-533-3211. He makes this program possible in large part. The Cleaning Solution will come to your home, they come to your office, come to your residence, your place of business, whatever. Anything that your feet might touch, as they say, whether that's your carpet, your tile, your stone, marble. Somebody asked about hardwood floors. Yes, somebody asked about the sort of the caulking, the mortaring between the tiles, between the bricks. You know, if you've got like maybe a brick inlay or something, and it cracks, and you just gets a lot of schmutz in there, they will de-schmutz. It's, I mean, really, it's like nobody's business.
Is that a technical cleaning term?
The de-schmutzing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Also a thorough scrubbing of the Mohegan. You can contact him at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211, Mr. Michael Beatty. And you can also, in addition to just sort of getting everything back up to snuff, as they say, getting everything back to the speed, making it look good, they can put you in a maintenance program as well to make sure that it keeps looking good in the future, so to speak. Less than you might imagine. You get a maintenance program there. It's like 40% of what it costs to actually get it cleaned, like, you know, once it's gotten horrible. So don't let it get to that point. Just let it, keep it looking good and keep it looking the way it looked when you got it. 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, one of the proud sponsors here at the Emerson News Network. All right, without further ado, we should probably recap last night's Mad Men, because that is a time-sensitive topic, as they say. It's the Rick Emerson radio program here alongside Don Taylor. Don't forget, if you do want it, somebody just sent me an email like, awesome, how do I talk like future guy? And that he's in Zurich, which is just, I mean, I don't know why that thing weirds me. I guess it's because it starts with a Z, and so therefore it sounds especially science-y. Well, so the way that the system works is you can call us if you like on a regular phone. That's 503-505. Although, who would want to sully themselves with a regular phone after that? 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also contact us directly via Skype, as Ryan just did, and that is Rick Emerson Show. That's the name that we use on Skype. The username, all one word, Rick Emerson Show. All right, last night's Mad Men, Episode 9. What is it called? Beautiful Girl?
The Beautiful Girls.
The Beautiful Girls, and it was Episode 9, Season 4 of Mad Men. Don Taylor, your thoughts?
Wow. I don't even know where to start. It was very focused on the women, on the females. And again, I always feel like there is something going on beneath the surface, that these characters are not just the characters, but they're also representative of something, you know, in the cultural zeitgeist of 1965. But in this case, it was just more, I just was sort of blown away by just them just knocking down all these pins of where all these females were. You have Sally showing up at the office because she just can't stand living with
Ryan.
That horrible monster of a mother that she has anymore. And she is the females of the future. She's just flailing about trying to find an identity and trying to find some kind of independence apart from the dysfunction that she's living in. But she's like 10, so there's only so much she can do. Joan whose husband is now in basic training and she's waiting for him to go to Vietnam. Faye, who has finally, like, you know, slept with Don and is now in that position of trying to figure out if she's Don's girlfriend or what, and being treated immediately like Don. Don is just so entrenched in just handing things off to women to take care of. Just like, I don't know how to deal with my daughter. Take her. You, nearest woman to me, take care of this. And she does, because, you know, she likes Don and she kind of wants to be in the girlfriend role but doesn't know how to deal with it. And then, of course, you know, Peggy going through all of the various things Peggy's doing, hanging out with her new lesbian friend, but the lesbian friend setting her up on a date.
Best line of the show last night is when what's-his-name said, "I'm not shocked by your lesbian hijinks." Which, I don't know, that's the sort of thing they actually said in 1965.
No, I think they're all being a little too cool about the whole lesbian thing, with him saying that, and then him saying, "There's nothing that a man, you know, there's things a man can't do," and then, what's her name, the lesbian friend, licking Peggy on the face.
I would almost buy that only because it's in Manhattan, and so you figure that, you know, that is not too many years before Stonewall, and so maybe it was a thing that came to certain cities, to metropolitan areas, maybe faster than it came to, like, Ohio. But it did seem like they are being deliberately, they're being, as you said, way too laissez-faire about it. But then again, maybe that's part of the act. Like, maybe that's the thing, is like the lesbian herself is acting like she's more confident than she is, and then what's his name, Stooge Adman, is acting unshocked by the lesbian hijinks, when in fact he is shocked / titillated / whatever. So maybe it's a front on everybody's part.
I also enjoy watching Peggy as she still is in this process of discovering just what equality is all about. That she goes, basically has the setup date with this guy, Abe. They start talking. He, you know, of course, they're both debating and arguing a little bit, and when it gets uncomfortable for her and she doesn't like the way it's going, she walks away and she says to him, you know, "Well, you're opinionated
and you're insulting me
and he's like, "Hey, I thought we were just talking about stuff," you know. So it's like she's not really quite ready to, you know, apparently dive in, you know, as an equal with male. And the interesting thing is, again, watching Joan and Roger together, whereas they are people who started with her being his, you know, sort of back alley mistress, you know, and the secretary he was humping and giving fur coats to way back in the day, and now they're both married to other people. But they seem to have, in many ways, it's like if they lived in a different time, they would have a brilliant relationship, because they actually do meet each other as equals in ways that they don't with anyone else in any other part of their life.
The great thing about the Joan and Roger relationship, too, is that of all of the characters on that show, they are, even though Joan is, I mean, you know, relatively young, even compared to the new crop of characters that have shown up, that Roger and Joan are the two characters who are the most stuck in an earlier time. Like, even more than Don.
Yeah.
Because Don at least is sort of trying to be cognizant of changing times because he's an ad man. Where, you know, but Roger, as highlighted in that whole uncomfortable episode with the Japanese, the guys from Honda or whatever, and just in general, he is very much a relic of an earlier time. Bert Cooper is actually such a relic, he didn't really do anything on the show anymore. He sits in the lobby and does crossword puzzles. And then you've got Joan, who is just not very advanced or modern in her thinking in some ways. She's very much living in, you know, it's still kind of like 1945 to her.
Yeah, and she has so many responsibilities in that office. She's in charge of so many things, and she is so smart and so capable. But she can't seem to make that jump to realize that she should be demanding that she be treated as an equal.
Well, she wants to. The thing about Joan is that she wants to rule with an iron fist, but like in this totally modest kingdom. That's the thing about Joan. She wants to be the queen of like the most insignificant kingdom there is, which is, you know, the traditional woman's role in the office. A couple of things. First of all, there's the line about the "I'm not shocked by your lesbian hijinks," and there was Roger Sterling. I mean, I wrote this down, and then I did not do what I swore I was going to do. I did not transition entirely my iPhone. I wrote something down on a piece of paper. On papyrus, on dead tree, I wrote something. And so then I forgot to bring it. But man, Roger Sterling is just, with the one-liners, that guy, whoever writes his dialogue, I mean, there was some real great lines last night, and just things that were sort of bleakly funny, or things that were just that were sort of very sharp and pointed, or things that were, you know, just things that were especially well crafted. That line when they're talking about the auto parts company, whatever the hell they were called, like, you know, like Mitchell Brothers Auto Parts, and Don has that line about our job is to get the customers to like them, not to get them to like Negroes, and then he just goes back to writing. And you just sort of, and that's one of those lines, it is, because it's the combination of crafted dialogue and then the sort of, you know, the lexicon of an earlier time where you're not, you hear it and you don't quite know. You're like, I don't know if it's okay to chuckle at that. And then you sort of do, and then you feel bad, and then you just don't know what the hell you feel.
And you're like, do I agree with that sentiment or not?
And that's
I don't know.
And that's the other thing, right? It's like that is especially the thing, you know, from my perspective, is because Peggy earlier, I think it was earlier, in the bar, is talking to what's-his-name, the Abe, is that the guy? The guy who's like, you know, he's sort of like the New York liberal where he's talking about, you know, you and your Madison Avenue selling consumerism to a fat, happy public, you know, and corrupting the American mind with, you know, commercialism. And so he's trying to make her feel ashamed of working in advertising. And he asks her, he said, well, and he's trying to find the limits of it. He said, well, would you have done an ad for Goldwater? He says, I'm assuming she'll say no. And she says, yeah, that would have been awesome. And he says, well, would you have voted for Goldwater? Or did you vote for government? And she said, well, no, of course not. And so she draws the distinction between professional and politics. And so then they have the whole thing with Don, though, talking about how the company apparently, you know, the company has some like exclusionary, you know, they have very racist policies. And so should they be working with that company? And Don is like, look, this is our job. Our job isn't to tell them how to, you know, how to operate, you know, how to behave socially. And but they set up the thing up with Peggy earlier, so you don't even really know how you feel about that. I mean, it's all very, very complicated. And then, first of all, did you know two things? One, I've decided that what I want for Christmas this year is, if only it were now possible, I was going to say that I wanted Mrs. Blankenship as my secretary because she's awesome.
Yeah,
did you know that was
anymore.
Daniel's mom in Karate Kid?
No.
Go back and watch Karate Kid. Ralph Macchio's mom? Yeah, that's Mrs. Blankenship, and now she's dead. I did not see that coming, even as much as that's a thing that they do in like every television series. And here's the other thing about Mad Men. They get away with stuff that I would consider so hokey and so corny on any other show, like the kooky hijinks where they're conducting a business meeting while smuggling like a Weekend at Bernie's body past the window, like wrapped in a blanket, and a guy's going, my mom gave me that blanket, or whatever. It was like so slapstick that it shouldn't have worked, and that it did. It was really fantastic.
Also noticing Don is still slipping a little bit, though, because he's letting the smarmy
Ken. Ken Cosgrove.
He's letting Ken make decisions. He's letting Ken say something. He's letting it pass, and that's not good.
Yeah, maybe he's just trying to figure out his priorities with his life or whatever. Or maybe
he's distracted
by the dead body in the office.
You know, and his daughter being there and other.
Boy, how much is the daughter creep you out by being just like Betty though?
Yeah, but God, I feel so bad for her, and I admire her to a certain extent so much because she's not allowing herself to be fully cowed.
Yeah.
You know, she's making her needs known, damn it.
She's a great actress, too. That girl who plays of Sally Draper is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like, I mean, I sort of get why the character's doing it, but it was not entirely unpredictable. I mean, it's the sort of thing you would expect, but it was really well done the way that she put on, like, I don't know, that she put on, like, Betty's mannerisms to a certain degree, you know, where there is, you know, she had a little bit of the, I don't want to say seductive. That sounds wrong. But you know what I mean? Where she is trying to be a little, like, she's almost like a little coquettish when she's, like, making him. Great line, too, when she makes him French toast and he says, what is this? And she says, Mrs. Butterworth. And he says, show me. And it turns out to be rum. And he says, that's rum. And she said, you know, is it bad? And he said,
not really.
Yeah. And then he just goes right back to eating his rum French toast, which is awesome. Anyway, so I think there's only like five more episodes or something, four more episodes this in this season. So this, I think, has been the best season so far, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is really, I have always said that seasons, you know, three and four, those are the most dangerous seasons for a show because if they can make it past that, then they're good. But season three and four, that's where a lot of shows start to suck because the first season, you know, you have your whole life to write. The second season is all the stuff left over from the first season. The third season is really the first season you're writing from scratch. So just like a band's third record is always the one that blows, a TV series, their third season and beyond, that's where it gets really tricky. But it's getting much better. I mean, every season, I think, has been better than the season before it. It almost seems like Betty Draper didn't have any purpose to be on the show anymore, though. I keep waiting for them just to kill her off in a car wreck or something so I don't have to see her. I mean, she's just such a completely... So that actress has got to feel a little annoyed, too, that her, like, time is just being shaved down every single week. And that she's just like a one-note harpy at this point, like, yeah, even more so than before.
But I think that's the combination, though, of them realizing as the show went along how unlikable the audience found her.
Yeah.
And then them realizing at some point, I think, that January Jones can't act her way out of a paper bag.
Yeah, no, she's terrible. She really only does that one thing. Anyway, so there you go. So it's I never watched the like next week on Mad Men. I tried to religiously to avoid those, so I have no idea what's coming up. Or
I don't either, because I don't ever watch that. So
I the one final line actually, it's when Don is telling what's her name Faye to take Sally home, and he said I'd have my secretary do it, but she's dead. It's like John Hamm's delivery of that line. They deliver a lot of things that would be punchlines normally on that show in a way that is, like, so matter-of-fact. I mean, if anybody else did that, like, I'd have my secretary do it, but she's dead, it wouldn't really work. But it's, like, the way he does it with such terse brevity is just awesome. So, anyway, so there you go. As we wrap this up, I have a question, actually, about something that's not Mad Men. I have a question about Sons of Anarchy. So you're watching Sons of Anarchy Season 1. You're about, like, five episodes in. It might be too early... Is that like a phone ringing, or is that actually in the Mad Men theme? Seems like I hear...
I think that's in the theme.
Okay, I hear like a little string section playing somewhere, and I guess it might be in the theme itself.
I think so.
All right. Guess I shouldn't have dropped out of that acid before I came to work. Don, do you hear the colors? When you watch Sons of Anarchy, mm-hmm. Do you sense... How do I put this? When you see the Katie Sagal character and then what's his name who plays Jax, I forget the actor's name, but Jax, who is her son, do you get a weird, strangely, almost quasi-romantic vibe off the two of them?
Not at where I am in the show so far.
And maybe it is just me, because I think it was from the beginning. Maybe it's like a chemistry that Katie Sagal and that actor have, and I can't remember his name.
I got a little confused for a while, because it took me a while to figure out that she's his stepmother.
Yeah.
And not his...
Wait,
isn't
now,
she his stepmother?
No.
Or she's his mom?
No, she's his mom. Clay is the stepdad.
Clay is the stepdad. Yeah, that's right.
Because his dad, John, I think, is dead.
Yeah, and it's the dead dad who's...
Has the journals.
Journals that he's reading. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I think Katie Sagal is his mom, but maybe it is just the chemistry between those two actors, because whenever they're... Like, there was this episode, no spoilers or anything, but they're talking on the phone a couple, you know, like 2 weeks ago, and it's like just the way they play off each other, it seems there's like this strangely, uncomfortably close incesty vibe.
Well, when I first watched it, my first instinct, the first couple of episodes, was I thought that they were doing Macbeth. And
Right.
Katie Sagal's character was Lady Macbeth. And then I later read an interview with whoever, and they said that actually they were basing it on Hamlet. And there's that, and there is like a, and if you look back at like, you know, most productions of Hamlet, there's this kind of weird, you know, Hamlet and Hamlet's mom kind of a vibe.
Yeah, there's a strangely close vibe between the two of them. Well, keep an eye out for that, because maybe that's just a thing where maybe I just project incest onto everything, Don. All right, there's your Mad Men recap.
That's nice while your mom and your wife are off spending time together. That we get to hear about your Oedipal issues.
What does one have to do with the other? I don't understand where you're going. All right. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Well, we are getting close to the top of the show here. So what we should do is we'll go back to the news desk. We should do the Taser Watch. And then I'll play this musical request. And what I'll do for tomorrow is I will actually create a small overview of these top fives. And you can choose which one we want to do tomorrow. Okay. So without further ado, ladies and gentle folk.
And now, from the news desk, This
I gotta say,
is Dawn Taylor.
I'm really impressed, though, because we've gotten to almost everything else today. I think the top five, which is it's sort of the thing that always gets bumped for whatever reason. I don't know why. It's the thing that that's the thing that bats last. We've gotten to almost everything else, so I'm happy with us. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
This is our Taser Watch.
Here's your Taser Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is your Taser Watch from Monday.
Onlookers saw an unusual sight at a Dutch Brothers coffee stand in Eugene Sunday night. Calls started pouring into dispatch when Brandon Lee Jackson, 29, was naked and making obscene comments on the corner of Franklin and Walnut. A mom was picking up her two high school students when Jackson jumped in their car and sexually assaulted her, police said. The kids and the mom got out of the car. When the police arrived, Jackson was trapped in the car and resisted arrest. Eugene police shocked him with a taser and brought him to the Lane County Jail on multiple charges, including sex abuse 1, unauthorized use of a vehicle, physical harassment, disorderly conduct 2, public indecency with priors, resisting arrest, escape 3, and unlawful entry into a motor vehicle. The children were not injured.
Here's the most interesting thing about the story is actually this. I don't get the deal, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I don't get the deal with Dutch Brothers Coffee. Is there like some rule that every third vehicle in Portland must have a thing on the back that says Dutch Brothers? Is their coffee made of gold? Does it come from inside Wonka's factory?
I don't know. I think it's that they have.
Is it just like a marketing thing? Do they have exceptionally clever?
They have good coffee. They have well located drive-throughs, and they're not Starbucks. I think is really what it is.
I don't think I've ever. I don't think I've consciously ever seen a Dutch Brothers drive-through. So maybe I'm just. Is it just like a suburban thing? Is it only in y'all's part of town? Because I don't think I even know where one is.
They might. I don't know if they're just in the suburbs. They're the ones with the big rotating cup, and it's got like the windmill.
Oh,
on
okay.
The
no, I have seen those.
Yeah, and there's a big. Yeah, the big.
I have seen those.
Cup.
I don't know if there are any of those. There must be some in Southeast Portland, but I don't know. Sadly enough, I could actually tell you where the three Starbucks closest to my home are located, but I don't think I could actually tell you where one of those is. I
went there this morning. Got what is called the double torture, which is the. The mocha with an extra 2 shots of espresso in it. And my danger, of course, as I've mentioned before, I always have to stop myself before I order it because I always almost call it the double penetration. And I don't know why. It's just that whole double something.
I can't imagine why.
The phrase I go directly to.
Well, that's like when you do like an autofill, like on Google or something. You're typing in, and Google says, did you mean to say? And then it's finishing and, and then it ends it with like, with a horse or something. And no.
So I was the other thing. It's like, I'll have a medium double. Torture.
Stupid mouth.
That's not it. Yeah.
Just real quickly, speaking of Starbucks, because there are... I don't know why that started
There's
playing.
A picture of the guy, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He looks like a guy who needs a tasing and a beating.
I think he got one from the look around his eye sockets there.
Yeah. No, that's that was a bad day for him. Speaking real quickly of Starbucks, because there's one actually down the street from my house. At where the QP cone used to be, which they've now... they did that Portland thing of like... demolishing something, building something new, and then having like a picture of the cooler thing that used to be there.
Oh, that's nice. Remember this thing that you used to love that's not here anymore?
Yeah, it's like the Coney Island syndrome. Like here's a quaint thing that used to be on the site where there's now a Starbucks. And it's not like I got some problem with it. I have nothing against Starbucks. I'm just saying like I like the thing that was there before. So they got rid of the QP cone, they bulldozed it, and then they put in this thing called QP Corner. And it's like a little strip mall or whatever. But in the strip mall is the obligatory Starbucks. And there's the creepiest, I don't know if this is on all Starbucks, but there's the creepiest slogan that is like, it's that sort of like acid etching on the glass or whatever, where they make the glass kind of frosted to spell out words. And the door of the Starbucks, their new slogan is, take comfort in ritual, which is sort of strange. And I understand that that's what that is. Like your coffee is like anything else. It's like a morning ritual. But that's the thing. It just seems a little overt, like in an addiction sense.
Well, Starbucks has always just been really deeply entrenched with the sort of psychobabble marketing stuff of trying to come up with some way to like addict you to it and make you feel like they're necessary. Like when I worked there when, God, I don't even remember, 15 years ago, 15 years ago, when I worked there, the big thing is they were trying to push that Starbucks was the third place.
Right, yeah.
Where, you know, you had home and you had work, and Starbucks would be your third place. You know, and, okay, sure.
Which is, you know, the other company that tried to do that to a much less successful degree was Kinko's. I remember in the mid to late 90s, and in fact, this is reflected a little bit in Jerry Maguire, because that whole thing where he goes to the Kinko's, I don't think they call it a Kinko's, but whatever, in the middle of the night, and he's preparing the thing or whatever, and there's just, you know, and it's the idea that at 3 in the morning, like, if you need to get a thing done, you can go there, because it's always open, it's always brightly lit, there's always somebody around, whatever. And Kinko's kept trying to position themselves, I think because they saw Starbucks doing it, as this place where you could just go, like, hang out. And I remember working in radio, and we would just get these press releases, these stories that were obviously, like, planted by Kinko's themselves, and they would talk about young people are flocking, you know, across the country to hang out at their local Kinko's, you know. And onlookers, social observers say it's a new social hub for the college, which is not true, which is never true. And it really was true for Starbucks to a great degree. But you know, one of the reasons that stopped being true was because they decided to start charging for their Wi-Fi. And that was really the undoing of Starbucks as the third place, which really was, I think, true for a while. But now it's like, if you're going to go there, everybody wants to be online, and you can't do it unless you buy one of their, like, card things.
Well, they've never been able to really figure out whether they want you to hang out there or not. I mean, when Starbucks first started, they were very aggressively designed to get you in and out.
Right.
The chairs were uncomfortable. There's a lot of there are a lot of glass and a lot of, like, sharp edges and shiny things, so that sound bounces around like crazy
and everything pokes at you.
Yeah, and it was literally consciously designed to make it uncomfortable for you to hang out there. So you would get your coffee and maybe you'd sit for a little while and drink your coffee and talk to somebody, but you wouldn't want to linger. You want to get out. They wanted as much turnover as possible. And then at some point during that period 10 years ago when I was there, they decided, no, what we need is that coffee house thing. We need to be more comfortable. We need to bring in big comfy chairs and couches and make it comfy. And I think they started doing that, and they started realizing, oh, wait, we were making more money
right
with the get them in and get them out thing.
Well, and that's, I think, originally because Starbucks was it was modeled on sort of, you know, like an Italian coffee bar where it is literally like a bar. Like, you go, like, they give you the coffee and it's not like there's a stool. It's not like it's set up to linger. It's like they give it to you and you drink it and you get out.
But they also, once they expanded and got really huge, they also hired a guy who was an efficiency expert from McDonald's to train them on how to do, you know, their point of sale registers and inventory and how to manage basically time management and inventory management. So they always say that it was all about, like, the Italian coffee bar experience and that sort of thing. But once they started really making money, they modeled themselves on McDonald's.
Yeah.
They just want to sell you as much crap as possible as quickly as
possible. In the shortest amount of time.
Yeah.
No, I think if we were able to just sort of take a spectrometer and look at the country and see every business that was modeled on McDonald's, I think people would be stunned if they realized how much McDonald's is the template for American businesses.
And Bruce Agler, texting from Tahoe, says actually Starbucks has stopped charging for Wi-Fi.
Is that true? Because they used to
I'm
be
just
like
saying a, that's what Bruce Agler.
Well, that would
says
be great.
From Tahoe.
No, that'd be awesome because it's like because it's the thing where you would go in. Like, this was always the problem when I would go to visit my my in-laws, you know, in Provo. It's like, you know, there's not a lot of coffee places around there, but there is a Starbucks because, like, they're everywhere, even in Utah. But you would go in and it's like they had Wi-Fi, but you had to buy, like, some sort of. Well, I'll have to look into it because that is fantastic. Although I don't like being this guy. Although Don. You know, my one of the apps for my iPhone, you know what that does is it shows the city block on which you're standing and
right.
Shows the nearest free Wi-Fi. Yes.
Also,
awesome.
if you need free Wi-Fi too, I highly recommend the Panera Bread locations because not only do they have really good coffee, they have excellent baked goods.
Is that like some other restaurant that you've only gotten to Tualatin? I don't even know where that is.
I mean, they may be more in the burbs than they are in the city, but they're a chain. They're actually a pretty big chain of these sort of bakery little cafe things.
I think there's one of those by Powell's on Cedar Hills Boulevard.
Yeah. And they make just brilliant, like, cinnamon rolls and scones and stuff, and they have very, very good coffee and free Wi-Fi.
We should wrap this up here. So I'm going to play this music request. So James wanted to hear this, I believe his name was. And you and I were actually talking about this, I think, just a couple weeks ago. And I was threatening to play it, promising to play it. And then I never got a chance to. And so James actually has requested this because I guess they're coming to town at some point. So so he wanted to hear this. This is the full-ish. I may actually skip ahead at some point to the glorious end so that we can make way for Sarah Dillon and Greg Nibbler. But James wanted to hear this. This is the more or less complete version of our religious nutcase watch. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you... do you know who does this? Do you know who even performs this song?
I think you said it was like Pantera. Is that who you said it was?
No.
Am I thinking of something else?
You're definitely thinking of something else.
Okay.
Nor was it Petra. This is Stryper, kids.
Oh, Stryper, Pantera.
Please don't ever say... Don't ever do that again with you. Why, you know, you say tomato, I say Pantera.
My eyes have seen the glory.
No, not Pantera.
I thought it was a woman. All the times I heard it before.
Yeah. You're forgiven for that. He did wear lady pants. This is from the Soldiers Under Command album. Where that great old rapper. He has like a Bonnie Tyler kind of a thing going on.
Yeah.
He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible soul.
This is the climactic album ending cut.
His truth is marching.
You know, their manager must have just thought this was the best idea ever. And also, it's public domain, kids. No royalties. The 80s were a terrible time for music. By the way, this guy, Michael Sweet, is now the new lead singer for Boston. And I'm not making that up.
Did he have a solo career, or am I thinking of someone else?
You're thinking of Matthew Sweet.
You're right. That's
okay, this isn't Pantera, and they're not being fronted by Matthew Sweet.
How great would that be, though? Pantera fronted by Matthew Sweet.
Singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Christian rock is always bad. Always, always, always. So just, that is all ye know and all ye need know. All right. Well, we should probably bring this to a close. Join us tomorrow when we will have, among other things, the Week in Geek for Mr. Aaron Duran. And we'll get to. In fact, I'm just going to make an executive decision. Tomorrow for our top five, we're going to do the five sleaziest songs ever to make the top 40.
Ooh.
That is the five sleaziest songs, or that ever got played on the radio, in any, you know, because they sometimes were on different charts.
That's saying a lot, Rick Emerson.
The five sleaziest songs that were still played on the radio.
That is quite the statement.
It's like I'm pulling a musical sword from a melodic stone, Don. So that's...
You've bitten off a lot there.
That's right. But I feel confident in my ability to execute that flawlessly. So that's coming up tomorrow. So Week in Geek, top five sleazy songs to be played on the radio, and more. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Oh, plus tomorrow... We will go through the box of the box from the Bugle people, and unless there's a surprise lurking within that we can't know about, we may in fact open the Think Geek box tomorrow and see what those fine folks have sent us. So, there you go. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Monday, September 20th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.
The preceding was a production of the Emerson News Network.